That's loud. Computers.
Mm-hmm. Well,
computers.
I made sure to check my audio settings this time because they inevitably reset again.
Oh, did they? Oh, yeah. Ooh, my Dropbox is on. I should turn that off.
Yeah, we are currently in a state of technology crapitude where I'm on a Skype version that's just gonna forget my mic settings every time I start it, and I just wait for the next version of Skype.
That doesn't happen to me, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad in other ways.
Yeah, I mean, could be worse. Could, you know, not work. But you know, this is fine. It's okay. I'll survive.
Yeah, I can hear you, so that's the important part, I think.
Mission accomplished. Now, continuing our theme sort of question mark. I don't know. If it's two, is it really, like, I don't know, continuing much of a theme? But
I was always told you got to have three for a trend line.
you need three for comedy. But see, this is a situation where we did My Name is Dolomite last week, and that was a movie where a lot of people were like, hey, maybe consider something from this for things. You know, this is a story of an outsider who made himself basically famous with his effort, and it was unappreciated at the Oscars when the news of that came out. And of course, something else that was unappreciated was Hustlers, which was a critically acclaimed film when it came out earlier last year. But I never got around to seeing it, and then I was like, hey, you can rent it, and then we'd have a theme, and then we can just keep going with things that didn't win awards.
Oscar snubs.
Yeah.
As they are known.
Yeah, the snubbiest of snubs. I guess this movie is kind of what I had expected going into it. It is Coyote Ugly crossed with The Big Short. But
it's a mini Wolf of Wall Street, but I don't think you've seen that one.
No, I haven't seen that one. But it's, you know, it does what it says on the tin. They hustle.
there's stripper ladies, and then it's pretty standard crime story. You got your struggling to make ends meet, teaming up with somebody to try and do better, and then discovering that you're real good. And then also there's opportunity for being even better, making more money by doing questionable things. And then the questionable things tend to spiral out of control. And then you get caught. And then there's a reckoning at the end where, you know, things fall apart and people are remorseful and stuff. And then it's over.
Yeah.
Movies go.
Yeah, I mean, you get your Goodfellas ending, you get your Godfather 2 Betrayal, you get everything that you want in this sort of a film.
Yeah, you should really see Wolf of Wall Street. It's also got a little bit of Boiler Room in it. You ever see Boiler Room?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's Giovanni Ribisi, you probably wouldn't like it.
Mm.
Vin Diesel's there, but it was before he was Vin Diesel.
So whom was he?
I mean, he was him, but he just, you know, he wasn't Fast and or Furious. He was wearing a suit. He still had the shaved head, but he had a suit on.
Okay.
It's also got that guy from what's that movie about college with Zach Morris in it? Dead Man on Campus. The other guy.
Didn't see that one.
Yeah.
Surprising no one. Now I think Hustlers is also notable for a couple other reasons, because you got Jennifer Lopez in it. J-Lo, as she is known, Jenny from the Block, on occasion.
I like to call her Jennifer Lowe.
Jennifer Lowe.
Yeah.
She, I believe when we watched, what was it, Out of Sight?
Her first movie.
Yeah. I may not have had a ringing endorsement of what was happening there on screen.
She was a little rough around the edges, but she was still good.
She did a very good job with this, though. She played it all the way to the top.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing that she gets to like play in the era, you know, the early 2000s. That's back when she was doing her pop star thing, and you know the glam world stuff. Like she knows that world really well, and her character is just, you know, her existence is almost entirely based on charisma. So like it dovetails nicely for where she came from and what, you know, the skills she has acquired over her career.
Yeah, and in addition to that, it's just fun to see J-Lo in a movie where they can't play any J-Lo songs, but they play all of her other contemporaries.
I saw that in the Wikipedia. Yeah. Is that because there were no J-Lo songs of the era, or they were strictly trying to remove them so there was no like audience confusion stuff?
Well, I mean, her bigger stuff was obviously earlier in the 2000s. I think they purposefully did not want to confuse you by having Jennifer right. Lopez singing while Jennifer Lopez as an actress was doing something else. Yeah. It doesn't really help her disappear into the role.
Yeah, that makes sense, because it's not like, oh, it's 2007. This upstanding strip club can't play any songs from 2003 because we only play the modern pop hits. That's why people come here. It's like, no, you could play whatever you want. It's, nobody really paying attention, so it's fine, but whatever.
Yeah. What's your favorite J-Lo song?
Oh, that is a good question. They're all going to give me some level of just like those cold shivers up my spine of nostalgia, because it's all just like awkward high school college years. But let's see what, let's just Google J-Lo songs.
J-Lo songs, okay.
Let's see. No. I mean, you know, Jenny from the Block was a thing. It was it was a big thing. Oh, If You Had My Love, that was like the first big one, wasn't it?
It could have been. It was one of her earlier ones.
Yeah. Oh, I'm Real. Oh my God, what a terrible song. Isn't that the one that had Ja Rule in it?
Could have been.
My God. Yeah, I'm gonna stick with Jenny from the Block just because it feels like a safe answer.
That I'm a Waiting for Tonight kind of guy.
Oh, that's a deep cut.
Yes.
That's not even on this list. That cut is. It's not above the fold on Google.
No, it's not one of her, I don't know, well-regarded songs. It is, you know, just poppy club stuff. And the music video for it, I think, is what I remember, because it was on TRL. Remember TRL? It was for a really long time. And
I feel like there is a subsection of millennials that could be defined as a TRL generation, because it was a very specific thing, and I am all about it. Like, come home from school and watch the TRL. Like, I remember watching that stupid video with Britney Spears in the red leather spandexy outfit thing. Like, it was on all the time.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, TRL. She's got a lot of songs here on Wikipedia here.
It's like she's a singer or something. But She's you know, I've not done as much musical stuff in recent years, so it was interesting to see her do this acting turn here. She fully commits to the role, and she's also a producer on this, so that helps. Sometimes I will say that you either get a situation where an actor makes the whole movie all about them and gets lost in the point of making the movie. I don't feel like that happened with her as a producer. And you certainly still have like a real fully realized movie. It's not just like give me an Oscar, the Jennifer Lopez story, but she certainly stands out in it.
Love Don't Cost a Thing. I found another list of things. Sorry. No.
Okay.
There's Waiting for Tonight. Oh, it's all the lasers. The Waiting for Tonight video.
Yes. Yeah. Lasers. How could you forget the lasers? But I like J-Lo.
Who doesn't love J-Lo? She's an incredible performer musically and on screen. Like she knows what she's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, when she does all that stuff on the pole at the beginning, I can do zero of those things.
Have you tried?
No, Dan, I have not tried, but I can just look at that scene and tell you I can do zero of those things. I don't know how much training she did for this, but it must have been a lot of training.
I believe Wikipedia has a comment on it. She did quite a bit of training on that.
Yeah, because she does that thing good.
I mean, first of all, the flexibility alone is staggering, but I think the thing that that blew my mind when I learned it long ago is that it's not the people spinning around; it's that the pole spins.
Oh.
Yeah, that really, really reframes a lot of that activity in your mind, because if you had to, like, propel yourself around that thing, that would be something.
So that's an interesting way of looking at it, I suppose. I don't really have a lot of, I've not spent a lot of time contemplating the mechanics.
Yeah, we shouldn't myself. Get into it.
No, but so this is obviously a movie about several strippers who band together to sort of carve out something for themselves because the system is rigged against them, is their reasoning. So they deserve to get what they can from the people that they perceive as corrupt victims, so that makes it okay.
Yeah, and generally speaking, they're not wrong up until the point where they start going out into the regular world and seeking people that appear to have money that they can drag back into their world.
Yeah, and which is interesting because we have Constance Wu plays basically the sort of conscience of this, and Jennifer Lopez is, you know, sort of the id, like, we just need to keep going. We can make more, do more. There's always more to get out of it. You know, why hold back? And she gets more and more that way over time, whereas Constance Wu's character becomes more and more reserved and reluctant to participate, and ultimately decides that it's just not worth being involved in.
Yeah, she has abandonment issues as a child, and she's struggling to take care of her aging grandmother, and she's willing to do whatever it takes to take care of herself and her family and sort of, you know, survive. But at a certain point, the survival tips over into, it's not even greed, it's probably more ego than anything, but it immediately becomes a different motivation than the one she set out in the beginning. So it gets, you know, tension. That's what the story's all about, right?
Yeah. And you know, while that's a very predictable course of events for this sort of thing, it is based on a real accounting of a situation that had occurred, and these are real people. There's Jessica Pressler wrote an article in New York Magazine called The Hustlers at Scores, that was nominated for National Magazine Award. And then it was turned into this movie, basically. Obviously.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet. I found the article linked via Wikipedia, and I am looking forward to reading it. I kind of didn't want to read it ahead of time because it would probably cloud my memory of the movie, but I do actually want to read the real thing.
Yeah, I mean.
Have you read it?
No, because who has the time to read? but
we just watched a 2-hour movie.
Shush. No, but I really do want to find out, like, What are the parts that are more adapted? Because obviously they're telling an entertaining story with that as the framework,
sure,
to work off of.
By the way, I think there was also an episode of Script Notes, because I think Lorraine Scafaria is a friend of the Script Notes podcast, and I think she did some discussion with them about this stuff.
Okay, great. Is it on one of the episodes I can download freely, or is it on a thumb drive that I need to buy?
I'm pretty sure it was like a week or two ago, or maybe 3 weeks ago, and I think I actually listened to a portion of it. I probably turned it off because I hadn't seen the movie yet.
Yeah, well, she did a good job writing this. I mean, like I said, it's, you know, got a sort of predictable framework of things, but it still doesn't mean you can't tell an interesting story within that framework, and certainly shot an interesting story within that framework. I like how the movie.
I do have a practical question for you about the shooting of it, though. Did you feel like it suffered from budgetary issues, maybe?
You mean, do I think the movie looked cheap?
I don't want to say it looked cheap, but it looked to me like they wished they could have doubled their budget.
Well, I mean, everybody wishes that they could have doubled their budget. With directors, sure. Like, no, please, this is too much money you're giving me.
I feel like this movie would have been better served with a double budget.
Yeah.
Although $40 million movies don't really exist anymore.
No, but I feel like they made good use of the budget they had. I liked, you know, we have scenes in an apartment that don't feel like they're bad green screens, of course. They're actually in an apartment.
I think it's some of the, like, the, you know, there's the trope of the reusing the bar or whatever, where they have their repeated marks, and after a little while it's like, at least for my eyes, and maybe this is just my filmmaker eyes going, like, you probably didn't have any other locations, so you used the bejesus out of this bar and then the couple of houses and apartments or whatever too.
Yeah, well, I think they, for a storytelling point, wanted to reuse that bar because it made it easier when you're cutting back and forth to show that they're doing the same thing over and over again.
Sure.
There were the just audience other isn't like wondering. That too. Yeah, the audience isn't wondering, like, why are we here? You know, like, what is this new place that we're in? You're just seeing the same thing over and over again because it just shows that they have a scam that they're running.
Yeah.
That's very predictable.
Point, like, at a point, my brain kind of went like, is nobody in this bar that works there, like, seeing them do this regularly? Because even if the marks don't notice that they're putting stuff in the drink, like, that bartender's got to walk by one of these times and see what's going on. Like, nobody care? Nobody noticing?
Jennifer Lopez does hand the bartender, I didn't see what the bill was. It might have been a C note, as they say.
don't do that.
Yeah. So the bartender seemed to be getting a cut, at least from that bill being handed to him. I don't know if that means all of the bartenders are in it, because obviously you don't have a bar with one bartender. We saw other people bustling around in the background, and I think it's pretty obvious when you're dumping powdered substances into drinks, at least maybe in this sort of setting. But you know, it's just for the movie. I don't know what actual places they used as their locations to prey upon people, but I think it works well within this. I wasn't bothered by budgetary problems with that at all.
Yeah, I think part of it is just in the back of my mind, this being, it does feel like a miniature version of Wolf of Wall Street, and it feels like that partly on a story level, but partly just like on a scale level. Like it's an order of magnitude smaller than that movie, and I feel like they could have gone bigger with it and really leaned into it more had they had more time, money, etc., stuff like that. But you know, maybe that's just me projecting.
Well, I think there's also a lot of this film had financial problems for sure, because Annapurna Pictures was originally going to finance and distribute it.
Yeah, I read that. I couldn't tell if Annapurna had the issues or if the film had the issues with the fundraising.
No, Annapurna did. That's Megan Ellison's company, Larry Ellison's daughter.
Oh.
Right? Am I misremembering that?
He's that rich guy with the island.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's very rich.
He was the Cisco guy? Was he Cisco? Oracle. Cisco? Which one? I forget.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. He's one of those rich tech dudes. Larry Ellison.
Yeah.
The second autocomplete is Larry Ellison Island, of course it is.
Oracle. CTO of Oracle.
He's got a very John McAfee look.
Yeah, he's kind of creepy. He gave his daughter some money to make movies, and she made movies. And not all of them have been enormous financial successes. So it was rumored / sort of mostly widely known that he stopped giving her money. And then Annapurna experienced some financial difficulties where they need to rein in a few things, which is why STX Entertainment, a company that I think this is the first time I heard of their name, was attached to actually do this. But Megan Ellison is still on it as a producer, even though Annapurna didn't end up
Annapurna's done some good movies, though. They Zero Dark Thirty, American Hustle, Foxcatcher, Sausage Party, that probably took a hit. Phantom Thread, like, that's a big movie.
Yeah, no, they've made a lot of big movies with a lot of acclaim, but I don't think they've managed to make finances work out for them, for whatever reason.
This is like they're hitting at least 50% for big movies. Missing Link, man, like, it's nominated for Academy Award right here.
I think the really fun part though is that Megan Ellison's brother is David Ellison, who is the guy who founded and runs Skydance. Yeah.
Skydance. Interesting.
Really interesting family dinners, I'm sure.
Wow, this is a different, like, between the two of them, they've got like the mainstream movies and the art movies kind of covered. Like, they got all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but so Annapurna had some financial difficulties and STX stepped in to get this thing made. But I don't know, you know, how that impacted all the other stuff that was going on with it. It has a paltry budget. According to Wikipedia, this movie only cost $20.7 million to make, which is nothing these days. It is, you know, there are seasons of television that are more expensive than this movie.
It's got J-Lo in it, for Christ's sake. Like, $20 million, nothing.
Yeah, well, she's in it and producing it. Like, I don't know what her cut of it wound up being, or if she was taking less of a cut because she wanted to get it made, but...
I guess her cut was $18.5 million.
No. Probably not.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, also, shooting in New York is not cheap.
No. That's why we use green screens.
Yes. That's why we need to make all the apartments super fake.
You got Cardi B in here. You got Lizzo. You got Usher. I thought the fun fact that I saw on Wikipedia was Cardi B, Lizzo, and Usher's scenes were all shot in a single day just to sort of minimize... the expenditures of having them there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it costs a lot of money
to have fancy people on your set.
Yeah, but they're all willing to do a favor for J-Lo, so that was good.
Lizzo's like, all right, I'll take a discounted rate as long as I can bring my flute.
I did like the flute, but I forgot she was in this because she's not in much of it, so it's not like she's like prominently featured in the advertising. But
yeah,
when she comes running down the hall screaming that Usher's there, I was just wearing, I'm not sure what that was, some netting.
Tape. I think that was tape.
netting and some tape. I was just like, wow, you know. Liz is not in much of this movie, but she really committed to being in it.
I don't think the flute playing is historically accurate to the story, but I could be wrong.
They didn't have flutes back then.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of people in the back rooms of strip clubs playing flutes in their free time. But maybe again, I'm just guessing.
Not gonna say it.
Nope, that was not a euphemism, for Christ's sake.
But this is. Also interesting because it has Will Ferrell and Adam McKay as producers, and it has sort of a Big Short vibe-ish, kind of.
Definitely.
Yeah, so I'd mentioned that earlier when I was
had to work in the Wall Street angle, too.
Yeah, well, because Wall Street guys are jerks. I mean, what part of a movie can you make and you don't have a scene where somebody says, oh, those guys, none of them went to jail, blah, blah, blah. Let's go after them.
If Adam McKay is going to be involved, there's going to be something in there about the 2008 crash in Wall Street and how they're all horrible, responsible people.
Yeah. You should watch Succession, by the way. But
I just listened to Brian Cox on WTF, and it was very interesting.
Oh. Seems intimidating. I don't know if Brian Cox knew what he was getting himself into.
It was a very a good chat between the two of them. They didn't get like crazy in depth on Succession, but they did talk about the Succession guy for a while. But Brian Cox is an interesting fella.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, did he ask him why he was in Super Troopers two times?
No, they talked about his body of work, and the interesting thing is apparently Brian Cox has noted Succession's acclaim because everywhere he goes, people like come up to him and quietly whisper to him and ask him if he can tell them to F off in a video, which is apparently a character trait from the show.
Yeah, well, that does curse quite a bit. You know, this is a pretty fun one. Paint by numbers.
The Hustlers is a fun one?
Yeah, I think so. I had fun watching it.
Did you find it more fun or less fun than Dolomite? Well, we're comparing snubbed movies about people who bootstrapped their careers into being rich entertainers.
Yeah, and we're going to give only one of them the award for most fun.
Most fun, yes, exactly. the Defocused Academy Award snub award goes to...
I don't know. I mean, I guess theoretically I had more fun with Hustlers, but they're different still. Despite surface similarities in terms of, you know, making a success for yourself and, you know, bootstraps, etc. But I like the dramatic moments in here too. They're not too melodramatic, except for, I would say, the very opening part where Constance Wu goes home and sees her grandma and says, "Oh, grandma, your necklace." And she says, "Don't worry about that. Here's some money." And I was just like, this is, that's not your best. That's not your best writing and directing there, Lauren.
I mean, it, yes, it's pretty clear from the get-go when she's, when Constance is kind of getting hustled out of her cash with, you know, the clubs cut and then tipping the guy to basically, you know, let her work there unassailed stuff. And she basically goes home with, what, like $45 or something. And it's clear she's not having a good go of things. Then she's taking care of an elderly grandmother. Like, I don't think we needed the grandmother to be in any sort of particular peril because she's just, you know, she's old and sitting in a chair. Like, there's not much she can do. She needs the assistance. So, yeah, it was one extra thing that was a little unnecessary. Like, the whole going home, going to sleep, waking up and immediately getting back into the routine. It was like, oh, this is already exhausting and heartbreaking. Like, we already see what's going on here. But yeah, the grandma hawking her necklace for, I don't know, cash for some turkey sandwiches or something was a little much.
Yeah, but I do like that the movie lets you look at the situation through Constance Wu's eyes so you can become acclimated to this. Because, you know, we get sort of the gist of what's going to be happening here. But there's still humanization.
That's a big success that this movie could have done. Well, a different movie could have done this poorly. They very much start with these are people, they're regular people, they're human beings trying to survive however they can, as opposed to just like, look at me, I'm an attractive stripper, I'm going to take you for all your money.
Yeah, and when things are going well for them, they are like a family. And so it's not as, I don't know. There is a very moralizing tone you could take with the main characters here, where you just say that everything they do is wrong and they're evil people the whole way through. But I don't think the movie wants you to feel that way about them. There is some empathy for the main characters that they otherwise can't succeed in the world. That they feel that this is a necessity for them, or they're backed into it. But they start with the
general trope of things, like the way that they always do this sort of story when it comes to things like this or strip clubs or whatever is like, you know, there's nothing I wouldn't do to make sure my child has food and a house and all of that, whatever they need. And then it kind of spirals from there in terms of like, okay, what else can I do? And, you know, it's not by choice that they're going out of their way to like do all these horrible things. They're starting off from this very normal, just like, you know, you do what you got to do to get by kind of mentality. And I think they do a nice job of starting with that sort of stereotypical, like, you know, I'm here to just take care of my family stuff. And then just like the realization of like, well, what do you do now? Like, you can't just like stop. Like, how do you back out of this? Like, things are going to spiral. You can't just keep doing the same thing because the world around you is changing. And the way that they continue to justify their actions based on, you know, the new circumstances that surround them is what makes this story unique and interesting. But I like the way they sort of like walk you into that, where you suddenly turn around and you're like, how the hell did we end up here? Like, you know, I was following along and like, oh my God, we're in like way over our heads all of a sudden, but now what? Like, there's still no turning back. What are you going to do?
Yeah. And, I do like that there are a couple of moments where there's sort of an out of trying to get stuff together for each of these individual characters. Like Constance Wu has, the guy that she's going to like, you know, he's going to take care of her. She's pregnant now and they're going to have the kid. And then it turns out the guy's a jerk. And
cause he's G-Eazy.
Okay.
Did you recognize him?
No,
he's a rappy boy.
Oh, okay.
Are you familiar with G-Eazy?
No.
He's done some rappy boy songs with Cardi B.
Oh.
He's a popular rappy boy.
I probably maybe have heard it then.
You've heard some of his things.
Yeah, but he's no longer in the picture, and then so she has to go back to making things work for herself. And she tries to use her old clients that she was able to manipulate, but several years have passed and she can't no longer hold that sway over them. But by the way,
did you catch that that one fellow was Buzz from Home Alone?
No.
Yeah, the dude with the big fancy house.
Oh my god, what?
That was Buzz from Home Alone.
Oh my god, that looks nothing like Buzz.
Yeah, I mean, he's been making a little bit of a resurgence. He was in something else recently too, but we were watching. I was like, I think that's Buzz. Like, yeah, it's Buzz.
Wow. Oh my god, it is.
The guy who bought her the computer or whatever, and his fiance.
Devin Rattray.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Wow.
Yep. Buzz McAllister.
In late 2007, a documentary film crew followed Rattray's attempts to win the heart of U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice. He used love discs, love letters set to music and images to serenade her, and traveled from New York to Alabama, Denver, Palo Alto, and Washington, D.C. to court her. The resulting film, Courting Condi, was due for international release in fall 2008. Was due? Does that mean it didn't happen?
You say 2008?
Yeah.
He has no released IMDb credits in 2008.
Yeah. Guess that didn't happen.
That sounds like a lawsuit for a plot there.
Mm.
I was just looking at his thing. Russian Doll is the other thing he was in very briefly, which I just watched. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of buzz.
Oh, wow. He was Tinfoil Kevin in The Tick?
Yeah. It's if only we knew somebody who worked on that.
Yeah, well, yeah, interesting.
Wait, he wasn't the naked guy, was he?
No, he was the guy who had a tinfoil on his on his head.
I didn't watch it.
Yeah, it's fine. It's not a requirement. Nebraska, Blue Ruin. He's been in surprisingly more things than you would think.
Yeah,
I guess
he's making a resurgence. He was in Agent Carter. He was in an episode of Girls. Like he's still doing stuff. He's still buzzing it up.
Mm-hmm.
The Buzz Man. You think people just call him Buzz like all the time?
I don't know. He's not really recognizable as Buzz, so I don't think that
he is. If you look at him with the right eyes,
Is that like a Tom Cruise thing where he's like waking up from the eye surgery, Minority Report kind of eyes? But anyway, this is an interesting situation for her to find herself in, and she eventually goes back to the club and things are different now. She meets up with J-Lo, who wants to find out where they had parted ways, why they had parted ways, why they had fallen out of touch because of the daughter and stuff. And they reunite because J-Lo has a scheme that she can do.
She got a new gig.
Yeah, since the financial crisis in 2008, thank you, Adam McKay, for reminding us. Do you think it's in his contract whenever he signs on to do anything? He's like, I'm only producing this if I can talk about the financial crisis.
Absolutely. It is absolutely in his rider.
Yeah. So there was a nice Brian Williams moment there too, with aspect ratios and everything was fun. She's like, yeah, so they're a bunch of crooks. So why don't we just take their money? And she talks Constance Wu into doing this with her.
You said it like it was a much more sophisticated plan, but her plan is basically, I'm going to give them ketamine and MDMA and they're going to forget. They're going to lose their memories and get really high and have fun. And then we're just going to run up their credit card bills and take a cut from the strip club. Like, that's the entirety of her plan.
Yeah.
And the only reason that it succeeds at all is, again, charisma.
Yeah. And she is able to convince Constance Wu to come on board. And they have this operation that they've been running. And J-Lo says, I think they've done it like three times prior to this. They use Mercedes and I forget Lily Reinhart's character. as the...
Is she Annabelle? Annabelle.
Yes, Annabelle. She's the one who throws up all the time.
Yes.
Yeah, that was funny. But, have you seen Knives Out yet?
No.
Oh. All right, so they have...
Did she throw up in that?
No, nobody... There's no reason I would mention that, Dan. So, there's...
I was going to start reading the screenplay.
No, don't start reading the screenplay. Watch the goddamn movie.
Watch it eventually.
Just watch it. It's the only Ryan Johnson movie I like. If that's not enough of an endorsement, I don't know what is.
Who has time to go watch movies?
Yeah. But the plan goes awry here. They get the dosage wrong, or this guy is more susceptible or something. And so he's too pliable for their purposes. They managed to get the card, but there's a bit of a scare. And so Constance Wu's character comes up with this scheme that they should do this to people that they should like change the dosage, and they should do this to people that they have some sort of history with. So that way
people they know who like to party.
Yeah. That way it can be more predictable, because if they are, if they're just using strangers, then they run into issues of them finding out the stranger doesn't have money, or finding out that the stranger doesn't, drink, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So they, come up with this plan, and it's working pretty well for them. And they are able to execute this pretty flawlessly for a long period of time, where they get their victims drugged up, and then take them to the club and put them in the champagne room, and then run up their cards, and then take them and put them in a cab, and then send them home. Where do you live? New York. You're going to have to be more specific than that.
Yeah. By the way, I have to say, I loved the scene where they were working on refactoring the drugs and like testing it out, and then, like, they did their test and then just cut to they're both passed out on the floor.
Yeah,
and just startled themselves awake. They're like, all right, maybe we had that a little bit backwards.
Yeah, that was fun, and like scraping the like Teflon griddle with the thing, because they're trying to like dehydrate it into making a powder, because they were unsure about whether or not they could make the wet stuff into powder, or the powder stuff into wet stuff.
Yes, that was good.
Yeah, but so they have their Breaking Bad moment in here, and they are able to figure all this stuff out, and everything's going great, and they have a really good Christmas with all of the people involved, and it is like family. And there's a chinchilla coat, and everybody's happy because things are going super duper well. And they also had brought in other assistant girls to like help them with managing all of this. Where
they're expanding and outsourcing.
Yeah, they're outsourcing, and they put it on Craigslist. And so they had at the mall food court, a bunch of women show up, and Ma, who is not actually anyone's mother, as far as we know, is asking if anybody has any allergies. And the one girl says she's asthma, and the other girl said feet. And you're allergic to feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if a foot gets near my face, I'm going to shut down or whatever she says.
Yes. Yeah. But this is also where we're introduced to Mr. Bruce, the breakout star of this movie, as far as I'm concerned.
The pet chihuahua.
Yes. The tiny toy chihuahua, like itty bitty teacup chihuahua, small. I don't know if it's a teacup technically, but Mr. Bruce is very, very petite. And probably not very healthy, but whatever, he's adorable. And he's got a little bow tie in one scene, I think, and a little shirt. But
he's got a lot of it, yeah.
Yeah, he spends most of his time in one of the characters' purses. And so they all come on board, and also this is where we're introduced to the concept of no felons and no drug addicts, because that could make things go south. And so Coco is dismissed. But this is important to remember for later, because when J-Lo starts to get reckless and Scarface herself, she starts to hire on people that have these histories that could very easily be susceptible to making big mistakes, as happens. But the important part to remember is that things are no longer challenging for them. So this is, I think, where J-Lo tries to push the envelope, because there are other copycats doing the same thing in front of them at the club, and then she realizes she doesn't need the club, and then it makes it harder because then they have to use hotel rooms, and then some of the girls don't want to participate because it skeeves them out.
Okay, aside from the hotel room skeeving people out, which, like, totally get it, I love the idea that she's sitting outside the hotel room in an Escalade with an iPad with, like, a Square reader, and just, like, getting people's information, calling and checking on credit limits, and then just, like, swiping the card on her little iPad for everything that they're worth.
Yeah, it's the magic of technology.
Yeah, I mean, really, technology is the bad guy, the secret bad guy in this movie, because it just makes it really easy to get in way over your head.
Yeah, well, I know that you paid attention to this, and that is the evolution of Apple products over the course of the film.
Well, because everyone's being gifted, like, iPhone 4s and 4s's and stuff, and then eventually they have 5s, and mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think they quite made it their way to the iPhone 6.
No, but you got your iOS 5 and 6 era GUI stuff.
Oh, yes, the phone call interface. There was still a very fake iPhone interface that popped up very briefly when I think she took the photo of
Annabelle.
There was a weird share sheet pop-up that was not a thing, but whatever, we'll forgive them.
Yeah, but the... this is also where so Dawn is, of course, introduced as this person who has these problems and who will inevitably betray them. But J-Lo's also getting sloppy in terms of, like, dealing with other stuff. And because she's bailing out Dawn, she's not available to go help Kiki Palmer's character, Mercedes, with the guy who jumped off of a rooftop because he thought he could. Because he was drugged out.
He thought he would make it into the pool.
Yes, and he did not.
No. Which is honestly a pretty hilarious way to find yourself in that particular predicament.
Mm-hmm. Very naked.
Probably should have just left him there.
No. Well, I mean, you can't let the person die.
He wasn't going to die. He woke up in the car and then they hit him in the head again.
Well, they didn't know that, because if you're on a bunch of drugs that are not exactly helping you maintain consciousness, and you also have you also have head trauma, along with whatever else damage had occurred from that fall. But we obviously see him bleeding from the forehead. So, pro tip. Don't bleed from your forehead.
You have to land on your face if you're going to jump off of your roof.
Yeah. And then they have to carry him out to the SUV. And Annabella is so nervous she throws up. And then they get into the car. And then they're stuck next to state troopers. And then the state troopers go. And there's a momentary scare that makes Annabella throw up again. And then they get to the hospital. And then Mercedes freaks out because she doesn't want to take the guy inside. So she runs through the parking lot.
She runs through a parking deck, still all dressed up in her little denim swimsuit thing.
It was very funny. But this is where Constance Wu, you know, thinking on her feet, is just like, my husband, gets the guy on a gurney and then goes back into the car, drives off. She has to go deal with her regular life stuff. So she goes back home only to find that the babysitter has taken the kid to a neighbor's house. She goes over to the neighbor's house and picks up the kid, and then takes the kid, Lily, to school and is judged by all of the parents who are looking at her.
Because she's in not just club gear, bloody club gear.
Yes. Yeah. I would have maybe changed my shirt. But she... I like the way that's shot too, because it's shot from as she's walking to school. She's shot from behind her, so you see the ridiculousness of her outfit situation, but you also see on the sides of the frame all the judgmental parents walking by and staring and gawking at what's happening and gossiping. So I thought that was well composed, and. This is when, you know, Constance is like, okay, well, that didn't go well. Time to go visit my mom, my grandma. And she goes to her grandma and she's blue, and had apparently died at some point watching TV in her chair. So there's a funeral for the mother and grandmother, and Ramona shows up after, you know, after the big argument about how she didn't want to see her and she wasn't helping, blah, 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 and this is all her fault. And Ramona's like, no, I got one last thing to do, you know, no pressure, but it could be a big payout, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so, this is where the Doug thing happens. Let me back up. The frame story part of this with Julia Stiles as Pressler, the journalist, she gets kicked out of Constance Wu's house for asking about this, and Constance Wu doesn't want to get the other girls in trouble. So she turns off the tape recorder, which makes the audio in the movie go off until
she slams the door,
and then the audio comes back. I don't like that. And there's another time in this movie where with the Doug thing, there's a sting that happens later. So Doug... he is, you know, basically going to be taken advantage of, et cetera, for the usual stuff, the usual reasons. And, he has an actual like sob story, and it's not really that great. And, it is kind of pushing things too far for Constance Wu's character. But they do it anyways. And because of this, he calls and he complains about this to the police, and the police are like, yeah, whatever. And he's like, no, I have proof. And the proof is Dawn, a recording of Dawn. And then they have Dawn, and they use her to try to do a sting operation. But then that doesn't really pan out very well because Dawn is inept at entrapping people. It is the downfall. It is, you know, the end of Goodfellas. It is things coming apart for them. And
they all get arrested.
Yeah.
Everyone's separated. She takes the deal.
But there's another audio thing here. When I mentioned the tape recorder thing bothered me, another thing that bothers me is for the scene of the sting, they recorded it through a mic that, that Dawn is wearing as if it was a wiretap. And at first I thought there was something wrong with the audio in the scene. And then I was like, oh no, you can hear them get louder when they get closer to her and quieter when they walk away from her. Like this was too clever by half.
Yeah,
it's a movie.
I didn't figure out what was happening at all. I just thought that scene sounded shitty, which it did.
Yeah. It doesn't sound good. I don't think it puts you in the scene. It's not shot any differently. It's not like we're looking at it through a camera or anything that's attached to her or in the room, like a security camera footage. Like, this is just shot like the rest of the film, but for some reason the audio is gross because the audio is from her perspective. So it doesn't work for me. I wouldn't have done that. A little too creative. But they get busted for this, and well, not this specifically, but they're being trailed and whatever, and then the police come to each of their respective places and haul them off and into the jail cell where they all hang out for a second, and then they get Constance Wu's character by herself, Destiny, real name is Dorothy, and they're like, yeah, you know, think about Lily, you know, you don't want her to grow up without a mom. What are you going to do? And so she takes the deal. And then when they're outside of the precinct, out on bail, presumably, Constance Wu tells J-Lo that, yeah, I took the deal. And J-Lo is upset and she hugs and, you know, gives her the kiss and stuff and says, ah.
She's mad, never. But she understands because, again, you know. Constance grew up without a mom and all that story. So, yeah, she doesn't want the same to happen to her kid.
Yeah. And so they do that. And we get the end of that. And there's the end of the frame story, too, where a very fake pregnant Julia Stiles is walking through her house with a bunch of balloons because it's a baby shower. What coincidence in terms of timing. And she gets a call from Destiny, and she takes it in a room, and Destiny wants to let her know that she read the article again and that she's doing all this stuff in her life and she might go work for a pharmaceutical company, and that she wants to know if Julia Stiles' character had heard of anything from Ramona. And she says, no, I haven't heard anything since the one time I talked to her for recording that article. And she says, well, when you did that, would she say anything about me? And then we get a flashback to part of the frame story over the phone call. Anyway, the construction of that is interesting if you think about it. But they Julia Stiles is recording J-Lo as she's going through her purse, and it, you know, because she realized that she needs to carry everything on her that she cares about, because she can't just leave stuff in some guy's place. And so she takes out her purse, and it's not one of her big bags that she had before. She has even has a line earlier in the film where she says, there's no such thing as a bag that's too big. And she has this tiny little handbag that's not this big old designer Louis Vuitton thing. And she opens it up, and inside is her mother and grandmother's wedding rings. And she's got a photo of Dorothy, and she talks about, you know, how sad it was that Dorothy grew up without the mom, and that she relays the story to Julia Stiles, who then relays that back to Dorothy, to Destiny, over the phone. And that's basically the end of this film, with your Goodfellas like freeze frame text on screen things of where are they now, and like who took what plea deals and was sentenced to who knows what.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that Dorothy took the plea deal and did no jail time, but then they're like, J-Lo got 5 years probation, and then the other two girls got a couple of months of jail on weekends. It's like, you didn't really save yourself much by taking that deal there, but whatever, it's fine.
No.
You didn't know better.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know if it has something to do with like being more difficult for custody reasons or something, but whatever. They were not, I would say, punished to the degree that you might expect, but at the same time,
that one might expect for drugging random men and robbing them of hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, you'd think it would carry like some more weight, but I guess not. But for some reason, Constance,
that's probably a very large lack of evidence, if we're honest, and a lot of hearsay about what people did and did not approve.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. And it's interesting because J-Lo doesn't appear to have anything. She's fallen from grace. Like, she, you can see her dark roots exposed. She obviously hasn't been taking meticulous care of her hair. She has a tiny handbag. She's working at some business that's not glamorous.
She has a regular job. She's a little tiny back office thing.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Constance Wu, as Destiny, she doesn't seem to have taken a step down in terms of her living.
She looks like she's doing well. I mean, maybe that's just her saving all of her money, and you know, because she talks about her paranoia about, like, I always thought I would have to reach a certain amount of money and then I would be okay, but we never did feel that way. Presumably she was saving money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know, I don't know why J-Lo would have $0 and she would have like a house in, I'm assuming, Jersey. I don't know exactly what the rules are behind all of that. Maybe that's something you have to find out in the real article about what happened to these people.
I'll let you know once I read it. I'm sure it's in there. No, it's not.
No, they should make it like a Hustlers 2. Where are they now? But it ends how you kind of expect it to end. And you get a little kernel of wisdom from J-Lo at one point, the very end, where she says, America is just like a strip club. It's the people throwing the money and the people dancing. This is like, okay. Yeah.
How early on do you think she wrote that line?
I don't know. I mean, overall, I like it. It's not a horribly written movie. It's just
no. It's not bad. It's I wouldn't say it treads a ton of new ground for a topic like this. So it's sort of a crime story based on, again, like I said in the beginning, it starts with just trying to survive, and then things get out of hand and blah, blah, blah. And then the scope of things is so large that there's no out other than getting busted. So it's one of those stories, any sort of organized crime kind of thing. But it's interesting, I guess.
Well, it's still, I think it's also interesting because it flips expectations in terms of there's no man at the center of the story, or even as part of an ensemble. It's entirely about this woman.
The main character gets complacent and happy because they get into a relationship and attempt to have a real life kind of thing, but turns out you can't have a real life when your life is based on this sort of weird crime. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I mean, like in Goodfellas, you know, you have Lorraine Bracco and you have Ray Liotta.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, imagine if there were just two Lorraine Braccas, so, you know, or I don't know. Something like that. Sure. Just like if this was, you don't see movies of this kind that are entirely centered on women in the story. That there is
like
a man
a genre that's the opposite of a buddy cop movie, where it's a buddy criminal movie.
I don't know. Isn't that just like a gang movie, maybe?
I suppose they are kind of a gang.
Yeah.
Although nobody's really, it lacks the hierarchy of a gang, in as much as there's not really anybody at the top dictating things. They're kind of the two of them partnering, but everyone's kind of even a little bit, at least when it comes to distribution and stuff.
Well, yeah, but Ramona's in charge, and at several points, Destiny mentions that she's the CFO. Of their little company.
I thought that was more of a metaphor than anything. I don't think they actually incorporated themselves.
No. I wasn't being literal. I was just saying there is a hierarchy to how they do this stuff. And like when they can't get Ramona.
I thought she was just saying she's good at math.
No, I don't think she's just saying she's good at math. She's also like,
well, she's the one who does the books because she keeps the numbers.
But she also helps with planning things.
I suppose.
And keeping people in line. Like making sure that there's some structure to it. Cause she's the one who's like, yeah, no drug addicts and no felons. We need to keep our criminal enterprise on the up and up. There's some structure. Like Mercedes and Annabella aren't at the same, level, in terms of managing things.
No, but she does mention that they're like splitting things three ways or something. So,
yeah, they do split everything evenly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But whatever.
It's weird, though, because if they're splitting everything evenly, then how does Ramona seem to have an enormous like penthouse apartment and it's all lush and decked out and she's buying everyone all these expensive gifts and Annabelle lives in a brick box?
Maybe they're splitting it three ways, but not evenly, or splitting it four ways, but not evenly.
Yeah, there's a management fee.
Oh, I'm sure that operational costs.
Mm-hmm.
That gets taken out before people get their cut.
Yeah. Also, what do you think of all the music in here?
It fit the era.
There's a lot of music.
Yeah. I don't like Usher, generally speaking. So
I believe there have been some rumors that there are reasons not to like him. But
I think there are several reasons not to like him. I specifically mean his music. I don't really enjoy much of his music.
Well, there's Fiona Apple. Do you like Fiona Apple?
Oh, I do like Fiona Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, was that her first song?
Yeah. And yeah. J-Lo called to ask if they could use it in the film because Fiona Apple doesn't always license out her stuff, apparently, I guess. I remember some story about that from the time the movie came out because everybody's like, oh, Fiona Apple, what an unexpected choice. And it's like, no, they're fine with each other like doing the stuff. And she's like, yeah, so she totally supported it. But Fiona Apple is the I've been a bad, bad girl. And she's like spinning around on the thing. And it's your introduction to J-Lo. Britney Spears is in here prominently.
Mm-hmm. By the way, that Fiona Apple song is called Criminal. So that fits for two reasons.
It's a little on the nose, yes. But yeah. There's Janet Jackson. Lord, I guess?
Yeah, that was in there. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember Lord. Although, apparently, I'm doing that old person thing where I'm skipping just chunks of years because I was like, was that really? Wait, how long ago was that? When was that? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I remember that was a thing.
Yeah. There's Chopin, though. You like Chopin? You big Chopin
sure,
fan?
Big Chopin fan. If I was
they call
stripper,
them
Chopin fans. That would be my song.
Oh my god, that was so stupid. I can't believe I said that.
Well, I can believe it.
Yeah, but yeah, it was good. I think it's a bummer she didn't get nominated for something. I don't know if I'd necessarily have nominated Jennifer Lopez for an Oscar, but it's weird that she didn't get nominated for a SAG award. Because there are a lot of SAG awards.
She was nominated for a Golden Globe, wasn't she?
I don't know.
Well, I did find the script notes episode about it. It was the holiday live show that they did. So there was like four guests, but Lorraine was one of them. And the game they played with Lorraine at the end of her little interview was, is this a real or a fake awards show? And a lot of them were things that she or the cast had been nominated for and or won. So that was part of the fun of the game.
Oh, well, interesting. There's a lot of awards.
Yeah, Kevin Feige's in there too. So if you should listen to that episode, it's good.
Okay.
There's a lot of songs in this movie. Yeah, didn't I see somewhere in there that they said like there's no score in this too? They just really wanted to use the songs to sort of illustrate the time period and what was going on.
Yeah, and that also explains why there's so much slow motion set to music. But you know, and I think this movie shot well. I like the one kind of silly shot of them walking to the SUV and then the cameras, you know, panning across to the other side of the SUV, and
that was a nice little trick.
Yeah, they exit at the club. You know, it's showy, but it's fun. I liked it.
Yeah. I liked the one where they when they were doing the montage of the "Oh, here come my sisters" thing, how they were like walking in unison, like right foot, left foot, like in that sort of like flanking each other pose, and it was very much like J.Lo's probably done that like 800 times in music videos over her life, so it's just like, yeah, she's got this move down.
Yeah, and I like the costuming that they did for that too, because they're all wearing different dresses, but they're all basically that sort of royal blue color. To sort of tie it in together to make it seem believable that they're sisters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're sisters. Yeah. We all have the same taste in clothing and stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's well made. I like that.
It's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the problem with it is, for me, it's not the best version of this kind of movie.
No.
So it still sits a little lower in the pantheon of bootstrap crime movies.
Yeah, it doesn't transcend the genre, but it is still fun, and I do think J-Lo's performance deserves some recognition. And Constance Wu is doing stuff too here, but
I think J-Lo always deserves recognition, honestly, because she's look how many different things she has succeeded at doing so very well. So
when do you think the last time was that J-Lo walked into a place and she did not receive recognition, as if people were just like, who is this person, and just treated her like a normal human being? When do you think that last time that happened
when
was?
People were just like, oh, hey, look, it's J-Lo, and then just went back about their business? When she was a dancer on In Living Color. She has been famous for how many decades now?
2.5, I want to say.
What year is it?
It's 2020.
I don't answer that. Move distracted from the record.
Is this the impeachment trial? We're just going to not admit that it's 2020 into the evidence record?
Yes, we are impeaching the year 2020, to be honest.
Oh, well, then I don't know how that's going to succeed. But, yeah.
As well as the other one. Mm-hmm. You really should watch Wolf of Wall Street at some point when you have the energy and the fortitude within you to do so, because it is 3 hours long, but it is a very good movie.
I know. It's just, when I see that a movie is very long, I'm just like, who has the time? I'm just gonna put that one off.
If you ever get the internal feeling where you're like, maybe I could watch the Irishman, don't, and watch The Wolf of Wall Street instead.
Ooh, wow. See, talking about Oscars worthy stuff. That's an interesting thing to say.
The Wolf of Wall Street has some very incredible performances. DiCaprio like really, really went for it in a lot of places. And Scorsese is doing some very interesting Scorsese things. And in the vibe of this sort of story that we just watched with Hustlers, but it's interesting to watch them just like really go for broke on a story like this. Mm-hmm. And they do a good job of it. So that's my two cents. There's a lot more drugs. There's a lot more nudity. There's a lot more profanity. It's just bigger in every sense of the word.
Okay.
And he has a cool Lamborghini.
you love Lambos.
I do. Lambros. I love his Lambo. He has a white Lamborghini Countach, which is perfect.
Seems a little tacky.
Well, it was, you know, the 80s or whatever.
It's the style of the time.
Yeah, it was the style of the time. He also has a Ferrari.
Oh, okay.
And a helicopter. And a yacht.
Like how it just keeps getting more tasteful.
Boy, howdy. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't there a lion or something? Tiger?
What
am I thinking of?
Yes. The logo of their company has a lion face on it. They make a quote commercial for it in which a lion walks through the office. It's a brief thing. And it's CG. Don't tell people.
Yeah. Well, there was what was it? Just recently that there's still ongoing film scam stuff with The Wolf of Wall Street. Here it is. I remember seeing this earlier today. Real life Wolf of Wall Street claims he was scammed by film's producer, seeks $300 million in lawsuit. Jordan Belfort, the pump and dump scammer immortalized in Martin Scorsese's Wolf of Wall Street, said in a lawsuit Thursday that he was victimized by a far grander scam perpetrated by the film's producers. Belfort filed a $300 million fraud lawsuit in Los Angeles Superior Court against Red Granite Pictures and its CEO, Riza Aziz, saying he had no idea they financed the film with millions of dollars stolen from the Malaysian government. That's also a fun story. Remember that one?
What?
You didn't know about that?
They stole money to make this movie?
Yes.
Is it real?
Yeah, that really happened. Aziz is currently facing corruption charges in Malaysia for allegedly embezzling $248 million from 1MDB, a state-run media development fund. Aziz's stepfather, Najib Razak, was ousted as prime minister in the wake of the alleged theft of some $4.5 billion from the fund. Belfort, who served 22 months in prison after bilking investors out of a comparatively modest $200 million in the early 1990s, alleges that the 1MDB scandal has tainted the rights to his story. Belfort sold Red Granite the rights to his memoir and the sequel, Catching the Wolf of Wall Street. But in the wake of 1MDB scandal, the suit contends that the company is no longer able to fully capitalize on those rights, meaning they can't make the sequel. According to the suit, Belfort believed Aziz when he said that Red Granite's money came from legitimate sources, including high net worth individuals and Goldman Sachs. If you can't trust Goldman Sachs, who can you trust?
Unless his sale of the rights included a percentage of the film to be made, which it usually does not, then he has no claim. He got paid. What is his deal?
Yeah,
like, well, he's sad they're not making his movie, so what?
Yeah, I think he wants his rights back so he can sell them to somebody else.
I'm sure he does. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that he's claiming to be defrauded because he's actually in the movie. He has a cameo. So it's not like they did it without telling him.
Oh, no. See, the thing is, he's
a criminal and a liar.
Yeah, he's a criminal and a liar, and he's trying to get something that's not his back.
Interesting. It's almost like that's a theme within his personality.
Yeah, it's wild that happens. But you should definitely read about the scandal with that guy, because the whole Red Granite Pictures thing, it was just I think it was like two years ago it came up. You can find articles about that one. It was just this whole thing where he basically just like embezzled all this money to make the movie, but then also keep a bunch of money. So he is in trouble for that stuff, and now this other thing is happening with an the actual fraudster that is at the heart of the the film suing. So it's fun.
There's no way that the story of this could be anything more than just like a footnote compared to the fraud and scandals that are illustrated in the film itself. But I will definitely read about it because that is fascinating. But anyway, you should watch The Wolf of Wall Street when you get a chance. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Don't watch it on TV. Watch the uncensored stuff because it does not play well on television.
I like how you're telling me not to watch.
Yeah, you don't watch a movie TV, but it's on TV. they try to play this movie on TV. It doesn't work out very well.
There are some movies where I'm just like, what is the point of portraying this on television right now? Like, you're going to air this on Comedy Central? What are you thinking? But people like to do it. Some movies it works better than others.
Yeah, well, yeah. This one, no. But it's got some very good Jonah Hill and what's his name? The guy who plays Barenthal is really good. You got a little bit of McConaughey. Margot Robbie obviously is very good. This is like the first big thing I ever saw Margot Robbie in too. So there's that. Kyle Chandler.
I've heard many people compliment Margot Robbie for this.
Yeah, it's weird. This is going to sound like a backhanded compliment, but she was so good in this movie that whatever I saw her in after this, it was like, what happened here? You're better than this. Like, what's going on here? I just saw you in Wolf of Wall Street and you did a very good job. And then the next movie was not so great.
What was her next movie?
Well, there was that Will Smith one she was in, which was a very bad movie in and of itself. I don't think she can be blamed for that.
Oh, is that the one where you write down something and mail it and then the things come or something?
I don't know. It was, they were scammers. They were scammy boys.
That's not the one I was thinking of.
Focus. It's called Focus. It was a very terrible movie. Big Short. She was great in I, Tonya. Suicide Squad was obviously terrible. I can't remember. There was something else.
Anyway. But you know, I think I've seen her in Big Short.
Yeah, I think Focus is the one that I saw where, in addition to being a garbage pile of a movie, I saw her and it was just like, you could do better than this. Will Smith is not bad. Like, what's going on in this movie? This is not working out very well.
Yeah, one of the comedians that I follow and listen to on some podcasts, Louis Vertel, he was talking about, I forget, Margot Robbie's nominated for some stuff for awards this season for her role in Bombshell, and he's like, that was not really even like a role and like not one of her good ones. And he talks about all the good things that Margot Robbie has been in and done. And it's just like, and she's playing this like synthetic character that's put together and who's just like, gee,
she's an amalgamation of sort of other anonymous reports.
Yeah. Well, not even that. She's an amalgamation of other characters, but also they fabricated basically a more straightforward sexual harassment story to tell with her as opposed to, the more oblique sexual harassment stuff that I guess doesn't make as compelling for, you know, short movie stuff.
Yeah. Well,
but yeah.
Skip it. Watch Morning Show.
Okay.
It's a very good show.
All right. Well, after I finish watching Picard, I'm sure I'll get around to it.
Oh, fuck's sake.
You can't even pretend. The buzz, the town is a buzz about.
You can watch all of the Morning Show. It's already out already. Just watch it. Binge it.
You can't make me.
I had no intention of watching all of Russian Doll in one single sitting. We were going to watch like half of it, and then we were just halfway through, and it's like, oh, God damn it. Why do they keep making these shows so good, and it's all right here, so we're just going to keep watching. I'm exhausted, and I want to die, but we're going to watch it all the way through.
How late were you up?
We were probably only watching till like 12:30 or 1 a.m., but we started at like 7:30 or whatever.
Oh,
it was.
Boy.
Like, it was just, you know, It's 10 episodes and they're all like a half hour or whatever, but it was just like, I didn't have the energy to put Once Upon a Time in Hollywood on because it was on sale for like $12. So I bought it or something. It's like, I don't have energy for 3 hours of Quentin Tarantino. I know. Let's watch 5 hours of Russian Doll straight in a row. It's like, oh Jesus. Mm. But it was good. It was a good show. Did you watch that one?
No, I didn't.
That's good. I'm sure everyone has said that, but it's got some cool stuff. And Natasha Lyonne is an alien and great.
That's what everybody says.
Her hair and her suits and her weird, just like, even her over-the-top affected Jewish New York accent that she's doing is just, it's great.
Yeah. She's had an interesting life.
Yeah. I didn't realize, but Amanda was telling me, because she knows far more about people's lives than I do, that she had open heart surgery not so long ago because she almost died.
Oh, man. I did not know that.
Yeah, she had like major bypass surgery like a year ago or something. So now she's like not able to smoke. I don't know if she was actually a smoker before, but because she's a smoker in the show, she's like, I don't think she can do that anymore because she just had major open heart surgery to fix a lot of major, I don't think it was a valve problem. No, it was a heart infection or something. It was something really crazy. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you see people smoking in shows, they're
fake cigarettes, but they're still inhaling smoke into their lungs. It's just slightly less bad smoke.
Yeah, but you know, I don't know what the rules are for fake cigarettes on TV TV and movie sets.
Yeah, but those herbal things. But I feel like a doctor would tell you don't do that if you just cut your chest open.
She does it for her art.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
And on that note, of people doing it for their art, we should stop talking to each other.
We should. We can, we'll bootleg it up.
Yeah. Adios.
Bye, regular listeners.